Welcome, Sega fans, to the podcast where we celebrate the golden age of gaming via the world's greatest games company. It's the Sega Guys with me, Dan the Mega Driver, and my good friend, James the Segaholic. James, how you doing?
Brilliant, mate. Absolutely brilliant. How's yourself?
Very good, because we are once again joined by our good friend, the always awesome Sega Lord X. Mel, how are you doing? It's fine. Well, morning on your side of the world, isn't it, at the moment?
Oh, yeah. Early morning. I'm great, man. Totally happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
What are you playing at the moment, modern game-wise? You enjoying anything that's come out recently?
Well, actually, I've gotten into a Diablo 4 kick again. They changed a lot of things here the past few seasons, and I've been kind of playing new character builds and whatnot. It's one of the few games that my wife will play with me without argument. Which, let me tell you, when your wife will play a video game with you, it changes everything. You don't have to argue about TV time, couples time. You sit down, you put a controller in your hand, and, it's a beautiful thing. So, yeah, I've been mostly playing Diablo 4 recently.
Oh, awesome. I actually downloaded that again myself. I had it on PC. I was playing with my friend online, but my wife is currently in this mobile game that she's ropes me into. Right. So like, it's like a zombie mobile game. You just tap things, and it's one of those things you swipe things along. She's into it, so I'm like, if you want to get into video games, just look at something else. I downloaded Diablo 4. I've not been able to coerce her into playing it with me yet, but it's on the cards. I have been playing Doom: The Dark Ages, which I have loved. So I definitely recommend that, especially if people enjoyed the previous Doom games. But yeah, it's enough about the modern bullshit. Let's get into some proper classic Sega. So this was a topic that you suggested, Mel, talking about kind of our most prized Sega possessions. So I think we've all got something. For our audio listeners, we'll try and describe what we're seeing as much as we can. For those of you on YouTube, lucky you get to see some of these fine artifacts of Sega gaming past in via the conduit of your screen. But yeah, I think this will be a lot of fun, because I think we've got a mix of stuff that's kind of personally means a lot to us. So it will be good to go through all this. So Mel, I suppose we'll jump straight into this one. So given that this was your idea, and I'm pretty sure that you've probably got the more interesting stuff out there, let's see what you've got first of all.
I've been scanning his shelves while we've been talking. I'm trying to get them. That's an impressive fucking collection, man.
Master System box there is awesome.
I know. I'm like, ooh, that looks pristine, man.
That's actually just one wall. There's four walls in here, and they're all full of awesome stuff. So
that's why he's called Sega Lord X.
One of these days I ought to set my camera up so it doesn't fall to pieces, so that I can actually pick it up and spin and show you guys the entire room here, just to give you an idea of all the Sega stuff that I own. It's quite a bit, but yeah, I don't mind going first, man.
Sorry, Mel, before you do, while we're talking about your shelf, is that Optimus Prime up there on the top left?
That is Optimus up there, man. Optimus is over here. Optimus is against this wall. Optimus is on this wall. There's an Lego Optimus above my head.
Oh, yes. I've got Lego Optimus up there as well.
I feel like I should go and get my MP44 for this show.
Same. I should have put mine down. Forget the Sega games. Let's get our Optimus Primes down.
Yeah. No game room is complete without a minimum of five Optimus Primes, man. if you have less than five Primes, you should be ashamed of yourself. Oh. And you need to work on it.
I do. I've only got the two in here at the moment. I've got a couple in the loft. I have to go get them down and buy one more.
But yeah, man, I have one that I want to start out with, and it's got a backstory before I actually tell you why it's special. The first thing is my CDX, which I think you guys, it was called the Multimega, right?
Multimega, right. Yeah.
Multimega room over here.
Well, this guy is in just the best condition. It's not scratched up. It works perfectly. And there's a story behind it that I think you'll find interesting. Okay, so picture this. It's the late 90s. I have a little piece of shit car. It's a Nissan Sentra. And when I say it's a piece of shit, it's a piece of shit. And all I've got is a cassette player in the thing, right? Old cassette player, crappy speakers. I want to play my CD music. So I'm like, oh my God, I still have this CDX that I'm not really playing that much. So I take my CDX and I put it in the car. And I buy one of those little cassette adapters that has the little auxiliary plug. Well, guess what's on a Sega CDX? An auxiliary plug. So for a few years, the CDX is my car CD player. Now, there was one drawback to this. The CDX skips like a bitch when you like move it just the tiniest bit. Okay. So one day I'm driving along and my CD player keeps skipping. And I'm thinking it's the position in the seat beside me. So like a dumbass, I pick it up and I set it on the flatter dash that I thought would help it. Which, of course, made it worse because it was a hard dash and it's just sitting there vibrating. So I go to get it and I'm fucking with it. I don't know where to put it. I set it back on the dash. And because I'm messing with it, I almost run off the road. I jerk the wheel. The CDX goes flying across the dash out the open window.
No.
Oh, dude. So I'm panicking. My CDX just shot out the damn car window. So I park up the way a little ways and I'm walking back trying to find where my CDX had shot out the window. It takes me a little while, but I find it. It's in bad shape. It's done messed it all up. The casing has cracked open. The PCB. I don't know if you've ever seen the inside of a CDX, but it's tightly packed. And when the CD case and when the plastic casing broke, it just spilled everything out of it. And I realized the PCB was damaged. Basically, I had killed it. And I couldn't believe it because my CDX still worked great. It was still in good condition. And I just remember thinking how mad I was because, of course, this is probably 98, 99. So I'm well past the ability to go back into a store and buy one at this point. So I'm screwed. I'm like, you know, I just lost my CDX. I'm pissed off. So a few days later, I'm actually looking for games, video games, at a pawn shop that's downtown in my local, you know, at the local downtown in the middle of the city where all these shops are. And I go down there and nothing is in the thing. But while I'm there, I notice that this kid brings in all of these old game systems he's trying to sell. And the proprietor of the shop doesn't seem to be interested in this stuff. He's like, I'll give you this, give you this. He's undercutting this kid something terrible. And so while he tells this kid what it is, this kid bags everything back up and he's leaving. And I'm like, super excited. I chase him out the door. I'm like, hey, kid, what you got there? You know, maybe I can help you out. Maybe I can buy. And he's like, oh, well, I was trying to get some money for this and this and this. And this little dude pulls out a CDX. I'm like, what is the chances of that? Come on. It's like, I just kill my CDX and then this happens. I was like, man, this has got to be some kind of like You know, I was meant to own this CDX, man, you know? And then he pulls it out and it's in pristine shape, you know, and he's got a couple of Sega CD games, a couple of Genesis games. He's got a couple of other systems. I didn't give a damn about the other systems. So I'm like, kid, I was like, I'm going to tell you what. I was like, what were you hoping to get for that? And he was, I don't remember exactly what he said. It was like $75 or something. I was like, kid, you just made my day. I gave him $150 cash for it and the games. He was super excited. I was super excited. I got it home, plugged it up. It worked. I couldn't believe it. Pristine CDX a few days later, after being a complete moron, sending my other CDX out the window. Man, you know, I always loved the CDX because of just what it was to begin with, you know. You know, the CDX was one of those things where it was like a Genesis and a Sega CD built into one little, just one of the coolest little consoles you could ever see, you know. And I had owned one and taken it for granted for so long that when I lost it, I really was devastated. But for that luck, that just unbelievable turn of events for another one to come out the blue like that, you know, I ended up buying it, still in pristine shape today, still works like a champ. It is absolutely one of the most prized possessions I have, you know, not just because of what it is, but how I got it too, you know. And believe it or not, I still have the broke up CD X that I destroyed. I was broken up about it. I actually like packed it away and I still have it.
Scooped up the remains for the side of the road. Like,
yeah, it's like, you know, it's like almost like, you know, picking roadkill up, like, you know, like a pet had gotten squished. But yeah, oh, definitely, man. My CDX, man, is definitely a prized possession.
I just wonder, has that kid grown up and has he realized that he's like, as time has passed, that he sold his CDX to like the biggest Sega YouTuber? It's like, like maybe one day he comes across and goes, that's who I sold it to. It's like,
you know, that would be funny if he like remembered that, wouldn't it? He's like a Sega fan today and he's like, holy shit!
Sega Lord X has got my CDX.
Absolutely. Now, you know what's funny about this story? I'll make this one short. It wasn't long after that I actually did it in reverse for someone else. I was trading in a Nintendo 64 and some games to the pawn shop down there, but they were offering me like really low prices. So it was like, nah, man, I don't want to get rid of this stuff for that low prices. And somebody caught me as I was going out the door and they were like, is that a Nintendo 64? I was like, yeah, it's in good shape too. You want to talk? And he bought my Nintendo 64 in front of the same pawn shop.
That pawn shop must have just made a load of deals by offering people crap money. But I'm sure that there must be something about the CDX and Multimega though, because James, wasn't it Tom Sharnock who had a Multimega that also met an untimely end?
Yeah, I mean, you asking if anyone's seen the inside of a CDX or a Multimega, I'll say, well, Tom Sharnock can attest to that he has. Whenever we had Tom on, was it last year? He's got a twin brother, and I think, was it Tom said that he wanted to play on it? His brother was like, no, it's still my turn. An argument ensued, and I believe his brother stood up and like basically picked it up and went, here, take it, and threw it at him. But Tom wasn't ready for the arrival at light speeds of a Multimega coming towards him. It missed Tom and smashed off the wall behind him. That was my reaction whenever he told me it was like, oh, fucking hell, man. It's like, and I think at the time, did he not say that his mum got him at pretty like new? Was it not like 350 quid at the time? Yeah. So his twin brother just basically rattled it off a wall because Tom wanted to play it. So Tom Chandler has seen the inside of a CDX or Multimega. There you go. Sorry, it, Tom.
It probably looked really similar to mine.
I mean, what are the chances one of the rarest Sega consoles that we know two people, two fellow creators who have both witnessed the demise of a multi-mega violently, one out a car window, one off a wall. It's like...
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I'm glad you got a replacement though, Mel. Did that replacement travel in the car with you?
Oh no. After that, I actually babied this CDX. I didn't put it in harm's way in any way. And then that car ended up going kaput anyway, got another car, got a proper CD player, and you know, thankfully was able to save this CDX.
Is that one of your main Mega CD consoles then that you still play and maybe capture from today?
No, but there is something coming up that is.
All right.
All right. There we go.
Oh, stay tuned then. We'll move around the table then. And we'll go to you next, James. What's your Sega prize possession that you'd like to share?
So the first one I've got is, it's a peripheral that I wanted. I remember seeing it in Sega Saturn magazine. And his name's going to come up several times in this show. Tom Thumb, good friend of the show. Good friend, talk to him quite often on WhatsApp as well. I love this game, but it's taken to another level with this peripheral. I'm talking about the Twin Sticks for Virtual On. I got this fully boxed for a total of 28 quid. Fully boxed. And I don't know if it was bundled with the game in Japan, but it came with a copy of it as well. So, yeah, this was one of these kind of things that back in the day I always thought looked cool as hell. And, like, obviously it never came out here. So whenever the chance came up to get one in that condition, absolutely had to take it, especially being boxed. It just elevates the Virtual On experience. Like, we've spoken so many times about how Sega were bringing the arcade home, how they accentuated the cabinet to match the home experience, or the arcade experience. So, I mean, the game and the cabinet won. Sega tried to do that as well in the home, not just with the Saturn. They've obviously tried it, and you know, with Mega Drive as well. You had arcade sticks and whatnot on there as well, steering wheels that kind of mirrored. I think it was a steering wheel that was meant to come out on the Mega Drive, but the design for it was morphed into the Saturn's arcade racer. But yeah, this is just like, this is so cool. I just like, honestly, it just changes Virtual On entirely. Even though I had no idea how to fucking jump in the game, I'm like, how do you jump? How do you jump? And apparently you pull the sticks apart to make it. And see, oh man, you like, it's the closest you can, like, see if Daniel gets his exosuit in Transformers the movie, that's what this is. Like, oh, you just, like, it just, you feel like one with the mech in the game. You talk about Steel Battalion's controller, which I did buy back in the day for the OG Xbox, and had, like, three panels. You stuck them together. I had to, like, a whole table to sit it on. But this is just, like, a condensed, like, mech experience, and even just the build quality, the metal base on it, the rubber feet, it just, everything about the micro switches on it, it's just, oh, and everything's all still so nice and tight, the buttons are clicky, it just, honestly, one of my most wanted Saturn accessories, and to finally have one, I am absolutely chuffed, so that's one of my most prized Sega possessions.
Yeah,
I love how they put the R and L on the sticks like they could have been anything else.
Like, did you notice that?
It's like, could that R stick have been anything but the R stick?
Well, the thing is, like my wife and I were driving, like, before we had, like, Apple CarPlay, like, which also lets you have, like, your maps on that. I used to be the in-car sat-nav, so I'd sit in the passenger seat and, like, read out, like, watching them, and I would say, left, and she would say, that left? the only fucking left there can be! It's like...
Yeah, so, like, there's only one.
So, you never know. Maybe it's helpful for people that can't read sat-navs. It's like...
I've just got this image of someone holding it upside down and clicking the triggers with their phone.
Oh, man, I don't know, man. You'd have to be Yeah, I'm not gonna say that, but
but it's like I just love the big fucking meaty Sega logo on there as well, which is even just the design of it, man. It's like if you've seen the Virtual On arcade machine as well, it's like it really is mirrored after it. It's like a shrunk down version of the arcade machine. They got the cool shit in Japan, they really did, honestly. It's even like the Virtua Stick in Japan, it's fully micro switched, whereas the Western version isn't, and it feels like a shitty cheap Amiga controller. Like it's just night and day, but this, I love this. This is just, and it's not even yellowed or anything. It's just pure white, man. It's just beautiful. Love this.
Yeah, mine's up there. It's I got mine from the Japanese auction site as well. Just like you say, it just transforms the game. It's absolutely beautiful,
mate. That was marked as junk. That was a junk auction.
So was mine. So was mine.
Junk. You know what I mean? Because it's junk / untested. £28.
Yeah, well, mine was, I think it was like a quid. But the problem is that when you buy from the Japanese auction sites, it's £1, 500 yen for storage, 500 yen to do this. And then it was like about £40 to ship just for
See,
that.
That's where I kind of luck out, you know, because like Tom's already buying a haul because he just buys shitloads off of like Sendico and Yahoo auctions and whatnot. So like the message that Tom sends me on WhatsApp is, do you need anything from Japan? It's like the Batman like gif whenever Michael Keaton sees the bat signal shine in his window. It's like, you know, because he basically all I pay is the price of the item plus the holding fee, the shipping fee from the seller to Sendico, and then what he charges to send it from his house to me. So because he's already buying the stuff, he just basically puts my shit in with him. So, legend. Thank you, Tom.
Awesome. Yeah. Amazing. I do love the sticks. I mean, I don't know what's going on with that Virtual On video. It's ready to go out at some point, but maybe it'll be out by the time this goes out. But yeah, when I was using it for that, it just makes such a difference. The reason why I reference that is because I was actually playing the Xbox 360 and PS2 versions. And even though they've got twin sticks and as many buttons as you like, it's just not a pattern using the twin stick. Are you the same, Mel? Have you played those other versions? And do you swear by the twin stick?
Oh, yeah. The twin stick has like a learning curve to it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you first sit down, if you've never played the arcade before, it is not an easy pick up and play. You know, you're going to fumble. You're going to get your ass whooped. There's a frustration factor to it. But there's also, you know, it's one of the sweetest things about a video game. It's when it clicks. Mm-hmm. When it finally clicks and you feel like you know when you need to jump, when you feel like you need to go left or right. You've got all those weapons at just your fingertips. When it finally does click and you have put in that time to overcome that learning curve, I don't think really there is any other way to play Virtual On. It's the stick or nothing. I mean, you cannot play that game the same way with a controller. I don't care if it does have two analog sticks. It doesn't feel the same. It doesn't turn the same. It doesn't jump the same. The twin stick is really the only way to play it.
It's like as well the fact that you push one stick up and pull one back. So basically, it's like you're trying to imagine the sticks are mapped to your shoulders. If you want to turn that way, you do that. You know, it's like that's the way you've got. It becomes like an extension of the player. It's so good, man. It's a completely different game.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it reminds me of, because there was a video earlier on Twitter. And it was like one from one of those meme accounts that has the blue ticks, and it doesn't matter what you're trying to, if it just comes into your feed. But it said 99% of men will enjoy this video, and it's just a guy sitting in a digger digging stuff up, and he's like, and obviously he's moving the digger around like that, and it's just that primal kind of boy want to power heavy machinery. It's just that's Virtual On with the twin stick. I mean, am I wrong?
I agree.
Oh, right. Round to me then. And we're going to go into the case. Oh. So this is the game's the case. So
we happy, Vincent.
Yes. We happy, Vincent. So what's in here? I'm just making sure I'm lifting it up the right way around.
Mate, if that shines gold in your face, I'm logging off.
No, it's just a Sega Mega Drive and controllers. The sticker on there says "Hands off my Mega Drive," so I know it's mine. But that "Hands off my Mega Drive" sticker is actually from Sonic the Comic, and that's how I own. I always know that that's our original childhood Mega Drive. That is the Mega Drive that we got way back in 1992. So that's why this console means a lot to me.
That's
And
awesome.
it's been through some shit. Okay, that console. I think it was I think it was early 94, maybe late 93. I used to go to my nan's when my mum was working. So my uncle would pick us up, take us to my nan's, and occasionally I'd take Mega Drive with us, or sometimes the Sega Master System. This day it had been snowing. Really heavily, actually. It was about 6 inches deep. So we're trudging up the hill from my uncle's car to my nan's. This gamester case at the bottom, these hinges are completely broken. So you can imagine this happened in 93 in the snow. I'm walking up, trudging up through the snow after my uncle, my brother, and sister around me. The bottom just goes and the Mega Drive just falls into the snow. All the ports, the controller ports, the AV ports, the power ports are thick just with clumps of snow. And
No.
we wrapped it up, dried it out, and I thought that was it, but it made it through that. It survived. It survived into the year 2000. And I'd have, you know, I'd, we had a job, I had a job around the corner from where I lived with a bunch of my mates, and we'd come back on lunch times, plug in micro machines, 2 6-button controllers, 2 3-button controllers, and our lunchtime would just be spent playing micro machines. This is my 5 or 6 years after micro machines had, been out. This is when we'd all had PlayStations and Saturns and even Dreamcast to an extent. The console is still getting play until the power supply goes, pops. And at the time, I didn't know where to get another one, so it just kind of it just kind of didn't go anywhere. So for a while, it was just kind of in the case, in the loft, until I managed to find an alternative power supply and powered it up again and cleaned it up. And yeah, once again, it was kind of my daily driver until, I got the Mega CD that I've got up there that came with a console with it. Because that's region free, I was like, well, that's what I'm going to use all the time. My sister was talking about getting a Mega Drive. So I was like, well, this was all of ours when we were kids. I'll get you an EverDrive cart. You can have this one. Recently, I helped her move home. She hadn't touched this console in, it must have been years, and not covered it up or packed it away properly. Bless her. It was just kind of in an open box. And James, I sent you the picture, didn't I?
Yes,
It
I.
was absolutely thick with dust, and there was dust everywhere. There was dust all in the inside. There was dust around the back. The switch wouldn't move properly. So once again, that poor little console that we've had between us for 33 years had to be rescued, had to be cleaned up. Yeah, so recently, that's when I most recently got it back in the case with the original controllers. Cleaned it up, polished it up, cleaned out everything on there. Actually ended up hooking it up to to my CRT and plugging in our original childhood copies. That's the one there.
Yeah,
That's what it looked
Oh my God.
like.
It's like
Absolutely.
blue cheese with the mold still on it.
Exactly.
And
I was like, the Godfather, look how they massacred my boy. It's like. But yeah, I got it back, cleaned it up, and I was feeling really unwell recently. I've been going through a few health issues, and as a sort of comfort, plugged in my original Sonic the Hedgehog, which is on the shelf there that we got with the bundled with the console. Plugged it in to the CRT, and just reveled in it. And you guys yourself know sometimes it's hard to find time to just enjoy games rather than just plug them into the capture equipment. Even when you're
Yeah.
playing a game for fun, it's like, I fancy playing this. Do you know what? I better capture some footage of it just in case it turns into a video. I'm just like,
Oh.
no pressure on us. I'm just going to play this at 50 hertz, so it's slow and everyone and People on social media, when I posted it, were going, "Ugh, were you playing at 50 hertz for?" Everything was great until 50 hertz. I was like, "Yeah, I know, but that's how I grew up." So
So you remember it.
that's how I first got to experience it, and I got to kind of relive that on the original Mega Drive, and that is why that particular console will always be special. I'm sure it'll be fixed up a few more times in the years to come.
Thing is, mate, like, what an absolute tank. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
you imagine putting a PS5 and an Xbox Series X into the snowman. Those things be like, ah! It's like the Series X has got that big vent on the top, like the PS5's got those like fan grills that just suck in dust. Like people have to like clean those things out regularly. There's this Mega Drive man just getting exposed to the elements, still works. Love it.
You need to do a video with that Mega Drive, man. You need to take it. You need to go down the road about 30 miles an hour, toss it out the window, and see if it survives. Is it better? Is it better built than the CDX?
Oh, can you imagine
That's
the thumbnail for that? A smashed open Mega Drive. Is it better? Question mark. It's like, get those clicks in, guys. That's
Now I'm curious, part of me is generally thinking, will it survive though? It's gone through all that already. That's why when I was saying when I bought the Mega CD and I bought it off this £50 auction where someone said, "I've literally just found these in the attic, no cables, don't know if they work." And it was the Mega Drive 1 and the Mega CD 2 on the Mega CD 2. And I was like, £50, I'll take that gamble because I know that Mega Drive's going to work. Those things are unkillable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
Oh,
brilliant,
brilliant.
man. Oh, so yeah, that's my first one. So, Mel, what do you want to show us next?
Well, you guys are going to be hard to follow, but you should like this one. This is my Korean Samsung Sega Saturn, the
Wow.
elusive.
A
You know, and
beautiful.
it's in fairly good shape. There is some markings on it that if you look close, you can see it. And there is a small story behind this one too, because I mostly collected the stuff in my collection between like 99 and 2008. That was when I was mostly doing my collecting. And fortunately, at that time, video game prices or retro gaming prices hadn't shot through the roof the way they have now. So, a lot of the stuff that's in my game room, I didn't pay anywhere near for it what it's worth today. I mean, hell, I have a couple of Genesis games complete in the box that would probably pay for every other Genesis game that I bought at that time if I were to sell it. You know, just to give you an idea. But what was happening was, you know, back then I was like, I want to buy every single Sega Saturn that ever existed. I want every model, every color of every model. I want the versions of the different third-party Saturns that were coming out. I want it all. Now, at the time, I focused mainly on, you know, the stuff that I knew about, the stuff from Japan. And just to give you a, you know, everybody always, you know, likes to criticize. It was like, oh, you act like you owned and played everything. Actually, I had no clue the Korean Saturn even existed for the longest time. I didn't find that until one day on the internet I saw it, and it's gotta be, you know, it's well into the 2000s when I realized this thing was not just that it existed, but it was also super duper rare. And it was exclusive to this region. Like the Samsung Saturn was actually only produced in Korea. So it was like, wow, like I didn't know all of these little facts about the, you know, the Samsung Saturn. So it's like, oh, I'm gonna go buy one. Well, by this time, the prices of the Saturn had started to tick up a little bit. It started to become more expensive than I wanted to pay for it. And so, you know, I finally find one on eBay where it's like the price wasn't terrible. You know, it was like the guy had buy it now. It was like $800, I want to say, which, you know, that's quite a bit less than what they go for today. But even then, people were recognizing what it was, how rare it was. The price of the thing was etching up above what the Japanese systems typically cost. So I'm like sending this guy offers like, hey man, you know, can you do me any better than this? You know, this, that, and the other. And I think he got sick of me asking, you know? And he was like, okay, I've got free shipping on it, but I'll let you have it, you know, for X amount of dollars as long as you pay the shipping. And the shipping wound up not being so bad. And I ended up getting it for like a couple hundred dollars less. He put a, you know, a make, you know, he put a buy it now on it that was, you know, I couldn't believe it when he did it. And I went ahead and bought it and it became part of my collection. And, you know, that was one of those. To me, it was really a learning experience because even at that point, I thought I knew everything there was to know about the Saturn. And it was so cool to have that happen because it let me know that I still didn't know everything. There was still probably a lot about this console, this era of gaming that I didn't know about. You know, I fancied myself, oh, you know, I know everything there is. I'm going to buy this, this, and this. This thing existed. I had no clue just how rare and, you know, important it was to the Saturn's history. So, you know, now that I own it, it's in good shape. It works great. You know, the stickers are still on it. The inside of it is immaculate. You know, it's one of those consoles I would never, ever mod in any way, shape, or form. You know, and now it just kind of sits on my shelf as this centerpiece. You know, there's like eight other Saturns loose around it, but it's sort of in the middle as the, you know, it's the crown, so to speak. And the only other Saturn that I don't own in my collection now is that Navi Saturn, the one that you could put in a car that had the little screen and the GPS and whatnot. I was not smart enough to jump on those when they were affordable. And once they started skyrocketing in price, they were well away from what I was willing to pay for them. So that really is the only other Saturn now that I don't own.
I think it's mad about the Samsung Saturns as well, is that even like the games, like on the gold kind of slightly actually says Samsung Saturn on, like, they've got their own branded versions of the games as well.
Yeah, and they're way
It's
more expensive than the
I
Japanese ones too. Like way more expensive.
just
If
because it says Samsung instead of Sega.
Samsung, and it's the same way with the peripherals too. Like the Samsung Saturn controller, way more expensive than a regular Saturn controller just because of where it was originally released.
I do like that though, even on Sega Rally, it's got Samsung Saturn, but it's still Sega Rally on
Yeah.
the game. If they call it Samsung Rally, I don't think it would quite have resonated,
Well,
would
no.
it? I mean,
Yeah,
what the hell is
doesn't have the ring.
Samsung
Yeah.
Rally?
Yeah,
No. But that's awesome. I didn't know about the Samsung stuff until, you know, it was a few years ago, but like it would have been 2010s, so you would have been clued dialed into that before. By the time I got to know them, they would have been like unobtainable. But
yeah.
it's interesting knowing all these variants exist out there. So you got the, you imagine you got the high Saturn and the V Saturn as well.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, it changes again when you get into like the Asian releases, because there were Asian releases where some of them were PAL, some of them were 240 volts, some of them were 120 volts, some of them had Japanese region encoding. I mean, it gets crazy when you start breaking it down like country to country, the different Saturn releases that there were. It gets to the point where you really do have to research it because they change so much once you get into that part of the world as to actually what the console supported, you know, the region, the voltage, you know, all of that stuff. You know, so yeah, I mean, the Samsung Saturn was just a small part of, you know, the various Saturns outside of Japan. I mean, you know, you th like again, you think you know everything, but there's always something to learn when you start reading that stuff. You go down that rabbit hole and it's just like, wow, I had no clue about that.
Yeah, like in South Asia, it seems like you're saying there's so many variants, but it seems like the quite a popular one was having there was a lot that had the video CD card pre-installed because it
Yeah,
was
it came
quite
with it,
popular as
right?
a video CD player.
That's that is it Insane Mega CD
Yeah, that's how he
on
got his
X.
first Sega Saturn. He
Yeah,
said his
and
first Saturn experience was his parents buying a video CD player that was a Sega Saturn and playing like
right.
Disney English lessons on there.
That's
Aye.
wild.
No, I mean, so just goes again, it ties out that whole thing about stories, individuality. For him to start in, I think primarily, first and foremost, was a video CD player. You know, crazy.
So, James, what have you got next?
Next up, I have two demo discs I'm going to hold up as, you know, a single entity because they are the PAL Sega Saturn launch era demo discs, the bootleg sampler, and the Panzer Dragoon sampler. Kind of pack in demo discs that the Panzer Dragoon one and the bootleg sampler one that actually came later on. It was on issue 3 of Sega Saturn magazine, but didn't come in that little sleeve. But aye, this here is where my love for this game was born. If it wasn't for that demo disc, my obsession with this game would not exist. So yeah, bootleg sampler demo disc, amazing. Obviously got that Sega Rally playable demo on there. It's front and center on the cover. It does have World Series Baseball, Clockwork Knight 2, and Bug as a playable demo. The PAL version is a replica of the second edition of the US version, the first run US version of Bootleg Sampler. Bug was only a video. It's now playable. So it's also got a more games reel, which features Congo, which if you're a follower of Sega Saturn Shiro, you will see that Dave and Peter last night streamed Congo. Peter loves that game. It's fucking awful, but fair play to him. But you know, there was some kind of like differences in terms of like we would never get Congo in the UK. It was only in the US. But
Just
yeah,
laughing at
Steve,
Mel's reaction here,
I
just
know
shaking
it's
his head.
utter disdain, wasn't it? That was like
Guys, you have to understand the personal experience I had of spending $50 for that, bringing it home in my Saturn, playing it, and being stuck with it. Oh, man, you know, I appreciate the Saturn fans that play games long enough to find the joy in them. I understand it. Bunch of games I've done that with myself. That is an absolute fucking zero experience right there. The balance of that game is broken. The challenge is broken. You can't continue once you lose all your lives. I mean, who were they making that for? You have those bullshit dizzy effects in the beginning of the game. You've got those earthquakes that are going crazy, shaking the damn screen up and down. Enemies are on you like fucking ticks and mosquitoes in the fucking, I mean, who made that? Who thought that was fun? More power to Peter, man. You know, that game sucked.
No, he did like an article, like a Best of Saturn article on the Shiro site in 2020. And I looked at it on my phone whenever I was on the show on Friday. And I said, I went, geez, man, Peter's went into some depth in this because I was scrolling like fuck, man. I was like, this is not ending. It's like a pure essay of an article, and he's found everything in that. But do you know what it reminds me of? As if it's a precursor to Trespasser. Remember Seamus Blackley's game with the big floaty arm and the shit physics? That's what it reminds me of. Like, is that well, Trespasser reminds me of that. It's just like, man. So maybe by proxy, because if Congo somehow influenced Trespasser and Trespasser caused Seamus to make the Xbox, then the Sega Saturn help create Xbox. There we go. I'm going with that. I'm going with that. That's my fucking reach, and I'll take it. I love that demo disc. I've got so many memories of playing it back in the day. And then we also have the pack in Panzer Dragoon. Now, in the US, you guys also got this demo, but it was in a sleeve that just says Panzer Dragoon on it. Whereas over here, we got this really nice welcome message in multiple languages, some nice artwork, and then obviously we got the disc itself. But the interesting thing about this is, well, doing the video, that's why I bought this again for the 30th anniversary PAL video I'm working on, or I've finished it, is that the demo that's on this for stage two, it's got major differences from the retail release. Now, bearing in mind, this is with Saturns, it came out on July 8th. You guys had already had it in America. It'd already been out in Japan, but yet for some reason, the demo for this is taken from the very first Japanese demo, which is called Panzer Dragoon Yu Hibaihin, which means not for resale. And it's got several changes from the final version. So in the final build, like they've kind of lengthened the level out by splitting up waves of the pink feathered kind of creatures. Because my theory is that if you know yourself in Panzer Dragoon, when you fly through the cave, like the music dies down, and then as you come out of into the daylight, the music dun, 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 it picks up, it kicks in again as you go out. But Yoshitaka Azuma, who was a composer for Panzer Dragoon, he composed the music for the game along to gameplay footage so that it looks as if the game reacts to what's happening on screen, like a film, like cinematics. And Azuma-san did work in TV at that point. But in the demo, that crescendo doesn't kick in until you start fighting the two giant sandworms outside the cave. So I think, and this is my theory, that there was a creative decision that it would be more impactful to have that crescendo kick in as the player exits the cave, which I think works a lot better. So they've basically split up a wave of enemies. The insects in front of the cave is combined with those kind of pink feathered creatures. They've taken them out that wave, made them a second wave of those creatures, stretched the level out a bit in order for the timing of the music to then catch up that it allows it to build as you exit the cave. So it's just, again, just it's got Valkyrie as well on and the Hornet from the launch UK advert on the front as well, which, again, he gets his eyeballs sucked out of sockets. Ashes a car. But these are just two demo discs that are a big part of my early days with the Sega Saturn, and it's absolutely amazing to have picked them up again. So, brilliant of them.
I would just like to add, the US Silver Sega Rally is much prettier than yours. Much prettier.
No.
Much prettier. Come on, man.
That's not artwork, mate. That's just silver. That's just silver lines, man.
You've foil. That's foil.
At least we can see the fucking mountain, man. What's happened to yours? I mean, I don't know what happened to Japan, man. They just basically, but that's the thing as well, right? Again, the perception of the cars got a tangent, and it's like, I think Saturn David noticed this as well. It's like in the Western releases, the Celica is front and center. In the Japanese one, it's the Delta. If you play the arcade game, if you look at the cabinet, the Link Up cabinet, player one has a Delta beside it, and player two has a Celica. On the bit that lights up, it says race leader. So it is, I think it was actually meant to be that even on the front, look, Lancia comes before Toyota. So I think it's a sealed Japanese copy of Sega Rally with a spine card, by the way. it was very much that I think the Delta was the main car in line with the arcade game, whereas over here the focus was pretty much on the Celica. But that's the thing, was it not? Was it Virtua Fighter 2 had that kind of foil silver cover as well, didn't it?
It did. The only two games on the US Saturn that came like that. so weird. I thought they were changing it to that or something, you know?
Crazy, isn't it? Why do you, was that just to show them as they're being the premium releases? But then Virtua Cop being part of the Big Three didn't get it. That's odd.
No.
Yeah.
So Sega Rally Plus has the Celica up front.
Oh, there we go. There's a curveball. And that's Japan only.
Yeah. Whereas the Japan only one, as we've established.
That's right.
I can't decide. All I know is I've got too many copies of Sega Rally.
Hey, the fact that you own the US version says it all, man.
Dan, man, you've just that's a fucking heel turn you've just done on me there. That's like John Cena booting Cody Rhodes in the balls of what you've just done to me there, man. That's like,
tell me why. Why, you son of a bitch?
Why, Dan, why?
Oh, brilliant stuff, mate. Yeah, I didn't actually play the bootleg sampler, as I said, until we started doing a channel, because, you know, my experience was the UK only Sega Flash. They use Sega Flash in Japan, but they're completely different. But yeah, that was my experience.
This thing is responsible for decades worth of OCD, right? Because it's basically got the arcade model Celica in it, which is way different to the retail version. And like for years, it was peddled that, oh, they changed the car model because Saturn couldn't handle it, blah, blah, blah. And all it turned out was that Nick found out through doing his majorly massive, impressive documentary that all it was that the model of the Celica had changed and Sega wanted to make the Saturn version more up to date. So that's why the Celica model was changed for the Saturn version. It's nothing to do with performance, but, you know, I do prefer the arcade Celica. So that's why on my Fenrir, I have the prototype that this demo was based on, that basically has that whole game, albeit minus replays and without an attract mode, but you do get to play the full game with that Celica. And the colour palette's a wee bit different. The greens and browns are a slightly different tone as well. See the shit that you notice, man. How do you?
Right. Back to me then. You might have seen that. I've been rummaging around on the shelves there, and it's because of something you said, Mel. So you'll realise why in a minute. So what I'm sharing is my copy of Panzer Dragoon Saga.
I know where this is going.
Obviously, it's a game infamous almost for how much it sells for these days, highly sought after. But that's not why I'm sharing. I'm sharing it because there's obviously a story about, and I think you both know this story anyway, but for anyone that hasn't heard it, me and my friend, you know, as we've talked about before, you know, a lot of the experience back in the day was sharing games with friends. So me and my best friend, you know, Mel, you had Nate. James, you had Sam. I had Charlie. Charlie was who I shared my Sega Saturn games with. And, you know, Sega Saturn's in its dying embers. Shining Force 3 and Panzer Dragoon Saga are releasing within 2 weeks of each other here in the UK. And, you know, both of us, between us, we're both working the same job part-time. Can't buy them both. But, you know, I say, right, well, I've got some money. I'll get Panzer Dragoon Saga. And then when we get paid, you get Shining Force 3. We'll both play them. When we finish them, we'll swap. And then we'll keep, because I wanted Saga more, he wanted Shining Force 3 more. But we'd play the one that we didn't want first, and then we'd swap kind of forever. That was the way it would work. So he gets Panzer Dragoon Saga. We go in. There's two copies on the shelf in the store that we go to. He grabs one of them. We pay. We go back on the bus from a town called Watford back over to his. And I'm there, and we've already played the demo to death, because obviously in the UK we got the first disc in this entirely. So he's straight into disc two, and I'm around there for hours just watching him go through disc two. Get through disc two, didn't expect disc two to end so soon. He's like, oh, it's done. He said, right, you might as well just take this disc one and two and take it home, and you can have it. And then I'll give you the rest when I'm done with it. I said, amazing. I'm going to finally get to play the next disc of Panzer Dragoon Saga. Cycling home, one hand on the handlebars, game in the other hand. I am literally round the corner from my house. Couldn't have been more than 30 feet around the corner. I turned the corner, my house is there. from nowhere, a football hits the front wheel of my bike. I'm only holding the handlebars with one hand, so I don't have full control. It turns me into spin. I crash into a fence, and my hand goes through the fence. And what I pull back is this.
Can't believe he's still got it.
I'm still, when Mel said that he's still got the carcass of his CDX, I've still got my Panzer Dragoon Saga Disc 2 sheared in half.
Oh, so, man. The fact that you've kept it all these years, that's sensational, man.
I just can't bear
man.
To not have it. But yeah, Disc 2 sheared in half. Blood's curdling down my hand, but I'm like, oh my fucking God, my game. Gone crazy at these kids that kick the ball at me. The dad's like, oh, what do you want us to do about it? It's like, buy me another fucking game. And so in the end, didn't get anywhere, but then went back round to my mum, told her what happened. She rings up Sega. I think this is Friday night, it happened, or Saturday. She rings up Sega on the Monday. She says, oh, can I get a copy of Panzer Dragoon Saga from you guys, or a replacement disc? And they're like, no, we're not making them anymore. You know, we've shipped out all we've done. We've went to the shop. None in the shop now. Those two copies that the shop had were done. So it was years. You know, in the end, Charlie gave me his save file for disc 4 so I could play disc 4 and basically the end of the game. But I could not experience the whole game from end to end. And it was kind of with the, like, eBay was in its early days at the time. I think it was like 2002, maybe earlier, maybe. And on there, I saw Panzer Dragoon, and that's when I started seeing, you know, the games, you know, at the time, it's like £200 for Panzer Dragoon Saga. That's ridiculous. Why are people paying this much money for this game? If only they could see it now, right? So I was like, but then I see this auction for discs 1 and 2 on their own, and in the end, it comes to something like 55 quid plus shipping. So 60 quid, I managed to get those final two discs without breaking the bank, without paying an arm and a leg, £200 for a brand new copy. Got those two discs, and now since then I've had the whole thing complete. So yes, that's why this in particular is special to me. Love the game myself, and yeah, sadly I've got this is a reminder.
Oh, you know, that was some trauma for a man to hold on to that for that long.
Mate, you need therapy after that.
I think so. Well, that's what this is, isn't it? It's therapy.
I suppose so. Oh, man.
Oh.
You two destroying shit, man. I don't know anything that fucking serious, man. It's like, there's some serious loss and trauma going on here, man. She's like...
Me and Mel causing collectors to watch this and then just have like seizures.
No, what's happened is collectors have now realised that there's one less copy of Panzer in the pool and one less CDX in the pool, so the prices are going to go up again. That's it. Write them off. That's the inventories went down.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Jeez.
Oh. So that's my... Go on, Mel.
I was going to say, at least you have the full game now. I mean... You were smart enough to grab those discs, you know, at the time instead of waiting. So, you know, silver lining to it at least.
Yeah, well, I was looking for just for disc 2 on its own, and I remember seeing that disc 2 was going for like 60, 70 per quid on its own at the time, right, amongst all the £200 complete impossible ones. So people knew that there were, I don't know, there must have been other people, or people just splitting the game off to sell them like piecemeal. So right, that was actually the best deal that I could find. There were competing bids for it. But I think I put 60 quid in. And because it was like early in its early days, or at least my early days on eBay, it wasn't that I was sitting there waiting for the clock to tick down to like 1 second and doing a snipe bid. I literally put 60 quid on the night before, went to work, came back and saw that I'd won.
Awesome.
That was the good days, man. Like, aye, now people have got like fucking timers and plugins that can bid for them and shit. It's just like crazy. Remember those days you could just bid on something? Oh, that was that. I'll just leave it at that. That's as much as I'm happy to pay. I'll just leave it at that. Oh, look at one. Nah, not yeah. now, man.
Yeah.
So back to you, Mel. What's the third piece that you wanna share?
All right, my third and last is another one that has a story, but it's a much simpler story. But it is the Japanese Wonder Mega. You know, jeez. I love this console so much. When I finally got this, I had it region modded. I had the multi-BIOS put into it eventually. You know, I mean, it's just, it was one of those things that I had to have because I couldn't afford it when it first came out. You know, the Wonder Mega was a really expensive console when those suckers originally dropped. They were hundreds and hundreds more than even the, you know, the Sega CD was or the CDX was by themselves. So, you know, buying one back then, it was like, man, these things are just too expensive. You know, I can't get them. So, of course, you know, years later, I finally get the Wonder Mega. You know, I when the mods and you know, people start putting up online, they start putting how to mod them, how to do your region switch and so on and so forth. So I start to do that over the years. And then it just stopped working. Just out of the blue, it just, I go to cut it on, nothing happens, no power. It just, it doesn't do anything. Now, I'm an electronics repair tech by trade, and I couldn't find what was wrong with it. You know, I'm like, what the hell? Like the normal, like the culprits, when something normally fails in a video game console, everything seemed to work. So I'm like, man, I got to get an engineer on this. I need to look deeper into what's wrong here. I need somebody that goes above my pay scale. And so I finally found a guy that took a look at it for me, and it was the Genesis VDP that had gone bad in it.
Jeez.
And I was like, no, because of course I'm sitting there thinking I'm screwed, you know, this Wonder Mega that I've had for a while, I've been upgrading it, you know, adding these region switches and whatnot to it. And then he's like, well, you're in luck. I have a Genesis 2 that I had to take the CPU off of it. And it's just, it's got a VDP on it, you know? And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I'll just take it off of that and put it onto this. And I'm like, no. And he's like, yes, it will work. It uses the same exact chip. So I'm like, dude, I'm all there. It's like, how much is this going to cost me? He's like, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to upgrade all the caps. I'm going to double check everything. I'm going to put this VDP on it for you, and I'll only charge you, let's say, $75. Wow. And I'm like, what? Like, you know, I'm thinking like this dude is scamming me, but he's got a reputation. So I knew he had to be the real thing. And sure enough, man, you know, he did the work. He sent it back to me. He resurrected my Japanese Wonder Mega. And, you know, I was so happy, and it served me for X amount of years, and then it died again. And I'm like, oh, you gotta be kidding me here, man. Like, what the hell? So then I go into it, and this time it was one of the ICs coming in that actually feeds power to the board that was actually failing. It was overheating. It was causing everything to overheat. So that's probably why the VDP died in the first place. Luckily, I was able to find this problem myself, replaced it, got it up and working. The Wonder Mega continues to live to this day. Since then, man, I've done just about every mod I can think of to it. You know, it's got the multi-region BIOS in now, so it doesn't matter which Sega CD game from which region you throw into it, it immediately, you know, pick it up and just run with it, you know. And of course, this is the version of it that had the S video jack on the back as well as the RGB jack, and it also had the wireless infrared controllers, you know. So collector's piece right here. I'm so glad I was able to keep it going. For it to have died twice and for me to keep it going and you know, make sure that it was still going strong in my collection. It sort of has become, like, through that trauma, like one of my most prized possessions, because I've been able to bring it back to life a few times. And to answer your question earlier, Dan, this is actually when I do break out the real hardware for the Sega CD or the Genesis, when I think I need it or I need it for a comparison, this is usually the console that I'll do it with these days.
Oh, that's a stunning piece. I'm trying to remember for the Wonder Mega. Was there another name, that, or was it another kind of model for it? Was it the XI? It's similar in.
Yep. What it was is in Japan, there's actually two different models of it. There's the model you see here, which is the R2, but there was an original model of it. It's shaped differently. I mean, if you look up the models, you'll probably recognize it right away. Yeah. But those two models, it was a version of this model that I just showed, is the one that came to the US as the XI. And they changed some of the features of it. But like in terms of the way it looks, it's very similar to this Japanese model right here.
Yeah. I'd love to own one of them. It's never going to happen, but you know, it's amazing. It's, especially since you brought it back from the death twice. You know, it's like, I still function.
Megatron mice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh man, that's unreal, man. For a console to die once and come back, but to be able to bring it back twice, and the fact that IC didn't do the same damage again to that VDP is a miracle, man.
Oh, it really was. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, God, I'm glad it didn't hang in there long enough to kill, you know, the graphics chip again, yeah, the way it did before, because then, of course, I would have to find somebody that would basically kill a Genesis so that I could resurrect it. So you're killing one cherished piece of history to resurrect another one, you know, and I hate doing that in general anyway.
I see there's people kind of ripping apart Mega Drive 2s and 32Xs to build these Neptunes as well, pretty much, isn't it? It's like they've got this Neptune board, and it's like all the bits are laid out for where things have to go, but you need to basically cannibalize two consoles to make this one. It's like,
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of tearing apart original hardware for anything. I understand if you want to upgrade original hardware, if stuff starts to fail or just it becomes a convenience issue. I can understand that to a degree, but actually killing and breaking down a console to create something else, man, you guys got to stop doing that garbage. I mean, it doesn't help anybody. And even when it's something that there's a lot of, it's like, oh, there's plenty of Genesis systems and you know, there's plenty of this and that. Man, there's going to come a time when there's not plenty of those.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff is breaking down. This stuff, you know, we're lucky to have it in our lives now, but where's this stuff going to be at in 50 years when you have people looking back and saying, I want to own this, or I want to collect this, or I want to see what this was about. And there's a lot less of them out there because of that, and because they're dying, and because they're being soaked up into collectors who will never, ever get rid of them.
It's like those AliExpress Saturns, you know. It was a rather large YouTuber who seemed a bit upset because a bit of an arsehole on X whenever I get engaged in debate with them about it, because their argument was that these are all in a landfill. I'm like, no, junk in Japan doesn't mean a landfill. It just means they've no means of testing it. And it's like, oh, well, there's plenty of Saturns to go around and people aren't buying them, so what's the harm? And it's like, but the workmanship that's going into these bastardized 3D printed transparent top shells, you're cramming a motherboard in there, you're blocking off the video CD port because you don't want people to put a SARU in it, you know, or a satiator, sorry. You know, they're built for SARU, but you don't want to kind of, they're not deep enough for you to put a Fenrir in either. It's like, they're just like, and they're, apparently they're moving like where the power inputs go as well. So it's just how reliable is that soldering job? It's like, you're not trying to gatekeep original hardware by any stretch, but it's like, is that really what you want to see being done to, you know, consoles that are part of a hobby that you love? You're not upgrading the Saturn by putting it in the shell. You're ripping its soul out of its body and putting it into something else that isn't going to last the test of time. It's like,
And you know, the thing is it's not like the thing is way cheaper than just buying a Saturn on eBay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are you saving by doing this exactly? You can't even mount a legitimate argument that doing this has aided you in any specific way that's, you know, helping. I mean, be real, man. I mean, there's times to do stuff and then there's reasons not to do it. You know, and this is just one of those things where it's like, man, just don't do it. There's no good reason for it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just no benefit either way to doing any of that. I don't know if that new Neptune that's being developed, is it in...
Is that, is 18, it in... 18 quid.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No, I mean, there's no need to spend 150 quid on a Saru Saturn. You can get a perfectly good Japanese one for way less. So the whole cost thing doesn't even factor into it.
Yeah.
Well, as I think the other thing to take from that, Mel, is just how important it is for people to service their stuff. You know, we're talking about how people are cannibalizing old consoles to fuel their projects, etc. And we're losing consoles that way. But these consoles, they have a shelf life, and that's why they need to be looked after. So, you know, you're talking about sending yours away and getting the capsule redone. I don't think people can't stress enough how important it is for people to do that work, I think, as well, just to maintain your stuff and keep it running.
Well,
what are you going to say, Jay?
I was going to say, like, that original Xbox that I've got, you know, off of eBay, was 105 quid. It came soft-modded. Had a bigger hard drive in it. Externally, it looked great. But unfortunately, internally, whenever I got it and I opened it up, the metal shell inside was really badly rusted. Like, you could see it through the vents. It's quite common for OG Xboxes. But the main thing, it was a 1.1 model with a Philips drive. But the clock capacitor had long since pissed its load all over the motherboard. So I sent it off, and Dan, yours is away, but there's a guy in the UK called Top Vint, and he's pretty much started up quite recently, and he's adding more and more services to his site. But he does, like, Saturn, Dreamcast, OG Xbox. He does, like, a TLC package, recapping package, and what he did was stripped down the Xbox, cleaned all the motherboards, removed all the corrosion. There was a capacitor to this, just adjacent to the clock cap, that had been heavily compromised. He changed that for free, which wasn't even, you know, part of the TLC, but he replaced that because he said it was basically, I think it was pretty much ready to pop on its own. He then cleaned all the rust off the metal shell, repainted it, and it's back up and running as good as new. So it's like, you're talking about maintaining your stuff. If you're not able to do it, there are people out there who can do it. Dan, you've sent yours off to get some TLC as well as your Master System as well. I'm going to send this Japanese Saturn down to get some done. He does vapor retro brighten because there's a bit of yellow into this. It's not quite the stone grey that it was. So he's going to vapor retro bright it, do the TLC on it, and just basically give it a clean, because I've not been inside that Saturn at all, apart from just to change the power supply. But I've not been down into the kind of the depths. I've not been beyond the metal shield and the CD drive. So I'll leave that up to him. He's the expert. But maintaining these things is key. They're not going to just keep trucking along without you taking care of them. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Yeah, well, the Xbox that I sent over was apparently, need to remind myself exactly what it was now, but it sounds like someone has taken the whole thing apart and then put it together in a different case, and the case doesn't fit the motherboard revision, so they've kind of had to chop bits up. So
the one you sent to Top Vint?
Yeah. So the one that I've been using is my modded Xbox. Whoever did the initial mod took it apart and put it together in a case that doesn't suit for it and chopped bits out of the case to make it fit.
Ouch.
Is he told? So what manufacturing dates on your shell?
I think on the shell it's actually 2002. And I think I remember saying to you, well, for some reason, my motherboard revision when I'm going through kind of the going through the console says it's 1.6, but the shell says 2002. And I think that's
one,
why.
That's probably that's a 1.4, maybe a 1.2 and a 1.4. Probably I went now. I went 1.2 probably for 2002. So, but you're on your soft mod dash, it says it's a 1.6.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is a different motherboard. Because like, it's redesigned, it doesn't have the clock capacitor on it. So I, fucking hell, man. 1.6s are rare as hell as well. So, like, because it was manufactured in 2005, just before Xbox 360 came along. So, Jesus Christ, man, what are people doing?
Yeah, I don't know what they were doing when they put that together, but there you go.
Fucking works, man.
Yeah, get it serviced. Get your stuff looked after. Is all we're gonna say. So, James, back round to you. What's your third and final piece you'd like to present, like to show and tell?
So, because we have been recording for a while and talking behind the scenes and stuff like that, obviously this will be repetitive to you guys, but to viewers it may not be. But the story of everyone knows where I'm going with this is, of course, a UK launch Sega Saturn. So this was the exact machine that I played Virtua Fighter on that I was surprised with. This is the Saturn that was behind the door when I was told to wait at my uncle's door. And this is what I heard running Virtua Fighter, what I first played Virtua Fighter on. This is the Saturn that was in the first year of my life from launch until I got my own in Christmas 96. But, well, that one is long gone. This one is proudly back in my possession, and you know, I've done several kind of mods to it. I've put a Fenrir in there, and the 3D printed tray is the same tone of blue as the blue orb on the Saturn's logo. So you've got that black and blue contrast, just like the box art. Obviously, I've changed the power supply for a more modern solution on it as well. And I know we just spoke about hacking up consoles and stuff, but this is for me. I've future-proofed this. I am not going back to pay collector's prices for games that I once owned. I pre-ordered Panzer Dragoon Saga and paid $37.99 for it. I am not paying £800 for it. I'll play it on Fenrir. So the good thing is that
if you want.
Go for it, mate. There you go. But no, obviously the disc drive that was in this, because I only played this every weekend and my uncle didn't use it during the weeks as he worked away and he wasn't really a gamer, he was just more like a techie guy that bought everything that came out. So the CD drive on this, it was used for a year, once a week, and then the console was pretty much just put in the attic after, 18 months? And that's where it's resided until I've got it back. So Dan, you've got a Saturn brought back to life that had a dodgy disc drive, and the power supply has went to Tom Charnock of the Dreamcast Junkyards because his Japanese Saturn, he wanted to plug it into UK mains. So I have revived two and kept my own one future-proofed. So, but this was the machine on launch day. Manufacturing date per the serial number is March 1995. I've dissected the number on the back. So, yeah. So VAO, 1995, March, made in Taiwan. There you go. And I've also had it 60 hertz switched as well. Darren Boz on Twitter he kindly took it in and done the wee switch for it, and he's hid it inside there. But it lives on 60 hertz. I don't ever change it back. I just leave it on that. But whenever he had it opened up, he said it is the cleanest PCB he's ever seen. So it's immaculate looking in there. But as I say, when I got it back during COVID, my uncle said he found it in the loft. That is what it looked like. It was basically covered in this white kind of undercoating spray. And I had to put a fair bit of TLC into it to just work at it. And a little kind of minimal grit kind of scourer that you used to do your dishes, some fairy liquid and just rubbing away at it and brought the sheen back. So that is my pride and joy. Like you're talking about like your Wonder Mega and your Samsung Saturn, you know, that is that equivalent for me, like to actually be able to look at that and know that's the one from that day is just amazing. That is never going anywhere. I will be fucking buried with this. Well, that would be unfair. Hopefully, down the years, whoever else gets it after me looks after it. But in the meantime, as long as I live and breathe, that will never leave me. So that is my most prized Sega possession.
I just got this image, right? In this dystopian future where all Saturns have been turned into those kind of Fenrir monstrosities, all the other Saturns have broken. And people are saying, right, where can we get a Sega Saturn, you know, that's working, that's in its original form? And someone says, they say one's buried with the Sega-holic. And it's like, grab your shovels and they're exhuming.
That's me getting exhumed. He said on his channel 50 years ago that the PCB was the best anyone had ever seen. It's like...
Oh, you joke, man. There would be somebody stupid enough to do it.
Well, you never know. Collectors might get up to some wacky shit. Maybe that's the next step, you know, exhuming retro gamers from their YouTube days to see if they're buried with any good
wouldn't
shit.
I wouldn't put it past Metal Jesus Rocks.
Well, if you had your basement flooded recently. Oh, man. Oh,
but yeah, it's a piece of your personal history of the Sega Saturn there.
That's a big part of like the whole gaming journey. Like we're not sitting here doing this if it's not for that. Like I got this back from uncle in April 2020, right? So this is like just literally as we started, because I wrote that blog piece on the old WordPress site, and that was literally the end of April 2020. I went and checked before we came on. So it's like it timestamps whenever the Sega guys basically started. So it's really important. So that's my most prized Sega possession.
And on that note, I'm going to go to mine. So
let's go, mate.
Yeah. So on a similar theme, and we've talked about, you know, expensive copies of Panzer Dragoon Saga, Samsung Saturns, multi-megas and so on. So we're going to end on a game that retails for probably about £5, unless you've got the American version, which is just this version with a barcode on the front. on the back. if you pick the barcode off your American copy of Sonic the Hedgehog on the Master System, you've just wiped about $150 off its value or something like that. It's but this game, this copy of Sonic the Hedgehog here is, again, I know it's mine because it's got the stupid Sonic the Comic stickers that I stuck on there, which obviously I was sticking on everything. It's on a copy of Sonic 2 and everything. So why is that important to me? I suppose, you know, last time we talked on the previous pod, we were talking about Sega's 65th anniversary, and we were talking about when we first became aware of Sega. And for me, obviously, I said, well, I became kind of aware of them through, you know, I first remember playing Afterburn. That's the first arcade game I remember playing. And then I had played a few Sega ports on Commodore 64, and I kind of became aware of them. And it wasn't until my brother said he wanted his own computer again in the UK. It's what we called everything that played any games on it. He wanted his own computer for his birthday, because his big brother wouldn't let him play his Commodore 64 enough. So he got a Sega Master System 2, and you know, I'm upstairs with my Commodore 64 before, and I come down and I'm like, oh wow, this game that he's got built in's pretty cool. And then the family are coming over and they've got these Master System games, and this is the Master System in like 91, so it's some, a lot of the games are fairly cheap, and they're bringing over Castle of Illusion, Space Harrier, and I'm playing these games and I'm like, okay, yeah, now I'm getting a little bit jealous. And then my uncle comes over with this, obviously probably this uncle probably a bit like yours, James, he'd spoil us quite a lot. He didn't have children of his own, so he he'd always be quite generous with his gifts to us. It still is, even with my kids. And he brought this, obviously brand new at the time, Sonic the Hedgehog, and playing that going into Green Hill, even though it was the 8-bit version, not the 16-bit version, and the speed that you could get, if either of you, obviously, I think you both know that in the 8-bit version, if you go down the ramp fast enough with the speed shoes on, you can go so fast that you go off the screen and the screen just. So that just blew my mind. And that was kind of where Sega went from, oh, yeah, they made this game and they made this game, to kind of, oh my God, I love everything this company does because they gave me Sonic the Hedgehog. And, if you're talking about, if it wasn't for this, there wouldn't be no Sega guys. If it wasn't for that game, I wouldn't have this love and affection. Well, it's not as likely as I'd have this love and affection for this company that I do. It's that specific cartridge, that specific game there. Still has the original manual in. Well, I did get a replacement that's black and white. But the original, for some reason, blue and white ones, that's missing the cover, I've got that as well. And the reason why it's falling apart is because I used to read the synopsis at the beginning over and over and over again. But yeah, if it's not for that game, it's very unlikely that I'd have had the obsession that I had, led into the Mega Drive, the Sega Saturn, Dreamcast, beyond all the way into the Sega guys and what we're doing now. So that's why that particular item is of particular importance to me.
And that's why the birthday gift I got you for your 40th, whenever we
Yes,
met
and
up,
we. I don't think we can see it at the moment, can we?
is just on the screen just now. Yeah, just it's there. So when I surprised Dan, thanks to linking up with his wife to arrange it, Dan and his family were going to Arcade Club in Bury for his 40th birthday, and I turned up with my family as a surprise. And it was a Sega Guys t-shirt, and I'd got him that framed Sonic 1 Master System cover because I knew that that was his favorite game, the kind of iconic game that kick-started his whole Sega fandom the way it is today. So it was quite, symbolic that the Sega Guys met in person for the first time, and the gift I gave him for his 40th was a framed cover of that game. So there we go. All
Awesome.
ties in.
Yeah.
So that's it then. So that was your last one, was it, Mel? I'm sure you've got so many goodies sitting behind you. You could probably go on all forever.
I was about to say we could probably do an episode like this another 20 or 30 times, honestly. I mean, just to show you, I had actually set out multiple things and wasn't sure exactly what I was going to show you. There's multiple I just to show you here for an example, Dragon
Oh
Force,
man.
Shining Force 3. I mean, just to, that's how much I love this stuff. It's like we were saying earlier, man, your personal experience with it, the timing of it, how things went with you, the friends you were with, the family you were with, all of that stuff plays such a powerful role in how we view this stuff. People think it's just simple nostalgia. It's like, oh, you just want to be a kid again, and you're stuck in the past. It's like, nah, man. It's like these experiences absolutely make you who you are. They mean something. It's not simple materialism. And when you understand that, it's real easy to understand why people love the games and systems they do. It's why I don't argue with people over what they think is the best game or the worst game or the best system or the worst system. It's like, man, your personal experience was so different than mine. It's just a conversation that would make no sense for me to try to take away from your experience. So, yeah. I mean, this is a topic we can definitely revisit many, many times.
Yeah, it's been great hearing your stories, Mel, and yours, James. It's just, I was still just thinking about that CDX going out the car window.
I just try to imagine your reaction, like, fuck. It's
Oh
like
yeah. You know, actually,
brakes
I think
on.
that's exactly what it was. Fuck. You knew deep down inside that it was destroyed when it shot, you know, out the window. It was like, there's no way it was gonna shoot out the window at that velocity, land on the side of the road, and still be okay. So yeah, painful.
You have to show us its carcass once you, if we do this this topic again.
Yeah, you know, as we were sitting here, I was trying to remember what I did with it. I know I have it packed away somewhere.
Oh man. See, that's that, like, between you and that carcass of that CDX and Dan with his smashed up disc too, and not just the fact you've kept the disc, the whole damn ripped apart packaging as well. It's like, thing is, mate, probably a collector would probably still pay you about 300 quid for it these days soon. You know, it's like,
actually, when he was talking, I was like, dude, you should totally put that on eBay. That's 200 or 300 pounds easy.
I actually have the what's not in there is the manual. The manual actually got through unscathed, and I completely forgot that it did. Until I was, I've been playing my main copy for years, and like for some reason I got two manuals in here, and then suddenly it dawned on me. All right, that's because the original one was in that pack, and I just switched it into disc 3 and 4, and then I bought disc 2 again.
A flimsy fucking paper manual survived going through a fence, but a disc in a plastic case didn't. Man, that's just teasing.
If you look at the paper, it's managed to hang on. So I think the fact that there's flex in the manual would probably just let it go.
That's the thing. See that PAL, Panzer Dragoon Saga package. Like, I know we were having a joke about Sega Rally's packaging versus the US and the PAL, but see those two separate cases with that bespoke artwork on the back of each, then inside that slipcase. I'm sure you get, is it Cremen and Gash that are on the back of one, and then it's Azel that's on another one, isn't it?
Azel on the back of disc 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And on the back of disc 3 and 4, you've got basically most of the cast.
That's it. Cremen!
You know, dude, there is right now somewhere in the world, somebody in the world who had his girlfriend break his disc 1 and rip his manual in half, or his dog piss on his like case and mess his disc and his manual up. He right now is sitting there without a disc 1 or a manual, and you could fix that for him.
Yeah, that's
man.
A good point, actually. I could, maybe I should sell that disc 1. I mean, I'm not going to sell disc 2 because why would anyone want that? But disc 1, because I've got obviously disc 1, and I've got the demo disc. So yeah, I'd help someone out. If anyone is in need of a disc 1 for Panzer Dragoon Saga, I'm happy to help out if your dog is pissed on it or eating it.
Because the disc 1 that came with Sega Saturn magazine had Not for Resale on it, didn't it?
Yeah, it has demo disc written on it.
So it always annoys me because people call that a demo, and it's not a fucking demo, it's a full first disc. People still go, oh, that demo. No, I know it's but it was the full first disc. You could save your game at the end of that and carry on whenever you got the retail version, because that's what I did. It's like,
that's right. My
disc 1 of Panzer Dragoon Saga was never used because I finished it on. So I sold that in 2007. I can't remember. It was 185 quid I got for it on eBay.
Whoa.
That's painful.
That is.
No, I need fucking therapy.
No. That's what we're here. Right. Well, you seem to have lost video on you there, Mel.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Well, I think we're at the end anyway. So if you want to tell our viewers and listeners where they can find you, where they can find your video, and where they can find, you know, your social media presence.
Well, you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on YouTube. I'm sure if you search through my videos enough, you will find something that you like. And I'm not pissing you off by telling you that a game you love is not really that good.
Oh, superb. Well, thanks so much again, Mel, for it's been an absolute blast discussing this
Thank you,
and
mate.
hearing your story. It's
Brilliant.
been honestly these hours have literally flown by. It's been like blinking, you'll miss it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
So yeah, if you've enjoyed watching and listening this on this to this one, well, let us know. Let us know what your most prized sacred possessions are, and you know what your memories associated with them are. And if you've enjoyed watching us and listening to us on YouTube, give us a like and subscribe, as that really helps the channel. If you want to be extra mega, you can think about becoming a member. And with our Akira All Access members getting their name read out as a special thank you, just like James is about to do right now.
Certainly, our Akira All Access members for today's show, we have G-Man, Stiff Peaks, Mikowski, Craig Williamson, Sega Saturn, Shiro, Resident SD, P-Wall, Peter 007, Andy Mackey, Nick Tullock, Greg Matthews, Tom Fum, Kaiju Leviathan, Nelson Serino, and David Owens. Thank you very much to all of our members and subscribers for your continued support. And if a monthly subscription isn't your thing, no problem at all. We appreciate your support, just liking, subscribing, spending time with us, enjoying the chat, getting involved in the comments. All of that is good stuff as well. So thank you very much.
Yes, couldn't be more appreciative, more humbled of everyone that comes in, watches and enjoys our content. So just thank you for stopping by, because our most treasured possession is you, our viewers and our subscribers. So thank you very much. And until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega! We'll be right back.